I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, all you beautiful people. Jeremy here from Sick Boy Podcast of the E1 Podcast Network. And first of all, happy Canada Day weekend to all y'all, even though it's Monday. But, you know, we're rolling through this long weekend. Really excited about this week's episode. We're plowing through those Vancouver episodes. But what makes this week so special is that we got to sit down with our new pal, Larry Gifford. Larry Gifford is the senior program director at 980 CKNW and AM 730 Traffic, and the manager and of talk and talent for Chorus Vancouver. So he's like a big wig in the Vancouver radio scene. So you know Larry's got that bitchin' radio voice. But here's what makes this so special. Two things. Number one, this episode was one of our bucket list diseases that we were hoping to cover on the podcast at some point. Parkinson's. And Larry dives deep into his experience with that disease. And we learned a lot with this one. But also what's really exciting is that Larry has just released his own podcast, and it's all about what it's like to live with Parkinson's. The podcast is called When Life Gives You Parkinson's, and it's available now on all podcast platforms, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever you use to get your podcasts. So after you listen to this episode, we know you're going to love Larry as much as we did. So when you're done, head on over to Apple Podcasts. Give When Life Gives You Parkinson's a search. Find his show. Give it a listen. And damn, we love all y'all. Thank you so much for listening. And we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did. See you on the other side. Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Larry. He has Parkinson's disease. Let's talk about it.
How do you guys get so handsome on podcasts?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know.
I don't know how it happened. I don't know.
Because my mom and my dad were pretty good looking, and they laid together in a bed.
Wow.
And I think my dad.
So it's not the podcast.
Ejaculated inside my mother.
Whoa!
And
went
then,
there.
Yeah, and then
went there.
And then that caused me to form inside her belly.
Wow! So it's not about the podcasting. It was more about
no.
The sex.
Yeah, it was more about my dad, and my mom having
more about the sex and the genomes.
Some hanky panky. Yeah.
No, I'm all good. I'm an open book. Whatever you need.
Great. Well, I think you can tell now after what I just said that I am also an open book.
Just describe your parents having sex.
You know what? I'm over that. I'm over no longer feeling comfortable talking about the
parent sex.
Parents, well, fuck, man.
Yeah, dude, you know what? And I agree, but at the same time, there's just not that many scenarios where I have to talk about it.
Well, I host a sex podcast, and so sometimes it comes up.
You should have your mom and dad on the show.
Bridie wants that very badly, and I don't want to cross that line. Well, that's okay. My parents having
discourse
sex is
about
neither
intercourse,
neither here nor there.
You want to talk about it more?
No,
now?
I don't. No, but you know what I would love to talk about is Parkinson's disease. That sounds much more interesting than talking about my parents bang. Larry,
hello.
First of all, I want to say thank you for allowing us to come into this beautiful space to record.
My pleasure.
We are in downtown Vancouver at the is it like the Vancouver Chorus head office?
Sure. Okay. Let's just say that.
Sure. And we're in this legit radio room.
Yeah. This is not the spare room at your house anymore.
No, it is not. There's all the walls are soundproofed, and we have a view of mountains at the window.
It's, oh yeah, there's mountains crazy out there.
We charge extra for that.
Oh,
Damn it. Well, good to know. We'll send you the bill or the invoice.
Yeah, great.
So we're here to talk about Parkinson's, which I have to say, I really am very excited to talk about because it's...
I'm shaking in my shoes.
I can't.
Zing.
Oh, man, I'm sure there's going to be lots of those.
I wasn't sure if we could go there or not. I was, like, going to say that I was trembling with excitement to talk about this, but I'm glad you did it first. It makes me feel more comfortable.
The reason I am so excited is because this was one of those illnesses. Oftentimes we have people ask us, is there something that you haven't talked about that you really want to talk about? And Parkinson's is... pretty high up on that list.
Specifically with Michael J. Fox, but we'll settle for Larry.
We can settle for Larry for today.
I'm sure. Michael J. Fox of radio.
There we go.
Parkinson's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you are, radio is your world.
It is. I've been in radio for 27 years, and I was on the air for over a decade, and then I went into management, and I was for the States originally. So I started in Columbus, Ohio, and then like all great radio people, you travel all across the country. So yeah. I was in Philadelphia, and then I was in LA, and I was back in Columbus, and then in Connecticut and Seattle. And so I've been everywhere. And now I'm in Vancouver.
Do you ever find yourself in like a really, really, really small town? Like we did an interview with Anna Maria Tremonti on CBC in the fall, and she was like, oh yeah, I used to work in Port Hawkesbury, Nova Scotia. And you're like, really? And now you're here?
Yeah.
Did you ever find yourself in some crazy small town?
I grew up in Columbus, so that's where I started. So Dayton is probably the smallest town I worked in. Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio. Is that a big race car place? Is that a thing?
No, you're thinking of the Daytona 500. Daytona.
Yeah, no, this is like the Wright brothers who invented flight.
Ah.
Yeah,
so, I've heard of them.
Yeah, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is there.
Okay, yeah. So now today what is your role today?
I'm the program director of two radio stations here in Vancouver, a news talk station and an all traffic station. It's just all traffic information all the
Exciting.
Time. And then I'm the manager of talk and talent for Chorus. So I basically coach all the talent on radio and TV.
Okay. Coach.
If you feel throwing out some tips or any like tricks for us in the middle of this.
That's
like,
the after drink.
Yeah. You know what? It would actually be kind of funny if you just threw it out right in the middle of the recording. You'd be like, by the way, guys, don't do that.
Bad question.
And this, sharpen that up a little bit.
Yeah. So how old are you, Larry?
I'm 46.
46. And how long have you, I don't even know if this is a question to ask someone with Parkinson's. How long have you had Parkinson's?
That's a good question to ask. I ask my neurologist that a lot. I've been diagnosed since last August. Officially.
Okay.
But I've probably had it for 8 to 10 years.
Whoa.
Really?
That's crazy.
And they say once the symptoms progress where they're visible, then you've lost 8 to 10% of your brain.
Whoa.
Oh, shit. So right
off
the bat,
about how smart I must have been.
Yeah.
You're going into an area where immediately I'm like, had no clue about that. So you're losing brain?
Brain cells.
Whoa.
Holy fuck. They're shutting down. So the neuropaths are getting blocked. The brain cells are dying. And so then that's why they tell you to exercise because they want to regenerate different connectivity through your brain cells.
Yeah, right.
So, like our listeners can't see you right now, but like, I mean, at first glance, there's not like anything.
I just
anything,
look like a fat guy.
You just look like a normal human being.
With the best groom goatee I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. I think you're onto something there, Brian,
not necessarily any visible symptoms when we're sitting down like this, but when we walked in here, there's a little bit of
there's a drag in my foot.
A gait. Right. Yeah.
Gait, a little affected.
And that's been with me for probably 8 years, but I didn't know what it was. My wife and I just thought I was overweight.
Right.
Or she'd be like, can you pick up your feet? And
You're shuffling.
Well, she wasn't harping.
Yeah.
I got to make that clear.
Larry. Yeah. Larry.
Jesus, guys. Why does his wife have to sound like that?
Your wife, not your mom.
It's probably more, Larry, you're shuffling. She was from England and she's lived here for like so long that the accent's just slightly gone.
Yeah. No. So we've been married a long time. We've been married 19 years. And so after 10 years of marriage, you just, friends, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, what's, like, just looking back, like, we'd be walking through the park, and I'm like, she's like, we're trying to have a quiet walk in the park.
Yeah, right. Like,
dragging ground.
What was going through your mind? Was it that I'm overweight?
I thought I was overweight. I'm, you know, exercise and I have been, you know, frenemies for a long time.
Sure.
And, As you can tell, it's not something that I regularly do and haven't for a long time. And so I just figured I was fat.
Yeah, right. Was it painful to have that?
It wasn't, but but that's what sent me to the doctor, you know, I guess about 2 years ago, was like I had pain in my foot and my leg. It'd stay for a couple of days and it'd go away. And then one day I was reaching to give, I have an 8-year-old son, and I was reaching to give him a glass of water. When I extend this arm, it shakes.
Now,
my right arm.
People can't see this right now, but you are extending your right arm towards me and it is shaking. You're not.
I'm not doing that. So I was handing him a glass of water.
No, you are. It's shaking.
I'm not forcing it.
Oh, okay. You're not forcing it. Okay.
So he's like, Dad, why is your hand shaking? I'm like, I don't know. And so that's when I said, I got to go to the doctor.
Wow. Okay. So now the handshake extend reach to your son, to the Larry shuffling through the park. How much time was in between, you know, the start of the shuffle to the
7 years?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm assuming that once you had that handshake and reached out, diagnosis came very soon after.
Well, they thought at first it was MS.
Okay.
So I went to a neurologist for MS, and they're like, hey, good news, you don't have MS, but I think you have Parkinson's. So then I had to wait another 6 months to go see the Parkinson's neurologist.
And I really don't know the difference between MS and Parkinson's.
Real simple, and people are going, oh, no, it's more than that. But the way they explained it to me, because I thought I was getting weaker on my right side, and so they did all these tests, and what they found was I'm slower on my right side than my left, and if I had MS, it would be weaker.
Right.
Okay.
And so if they were, okay, and I know this is just like a silly question, but if you wanted to have one of them, which one would you want to have?
You want to have Parkinson's.
Okay. I thought that that was the answer, but then there's a lot that I don't know about Parkinson's.
Why is that your answer?
Because that's what the neurologist told me, so I trust him.
Yeah, right.
But like sure. They did these crazy tests, and this is going to be visual, but I'll talk you through it. So if you take your forefinger and your thumb and you put them together like that, can you guys do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you're trying to squish
it. Pretty easy. Now do it with your other hand. So when I do it with this hand, I have to really concentrate, and I could barely get them together, and it takes.
And that's
a lot of effort.
And that's the neural pathways. You just don't have them anymore.
Right.
So
or they're deteriorating.
And just to describe that for everyone who's listening, is it looked like, you know, when you take two magnets and you try to put them together, and there's that like invisible force that's making it almost impossible for them to come together?
What's happening there, Jeremy, in between those magnets?
Magic, obviously. Magic. That's kind of what it looked like. Wait, was that like is that you doing that as fast as you can?
Yeah.
Holy
shit. And that scared the shit out of me.
No doubt.
Like, because you don't do that in normal life.
No.
Like, there's no reason to do that. So like when he like had me do that test, I'm like, I'm fucked.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But when you said initially that once there's visible symptoms that 8 to 10% of your brain cells have died, was that then, because you said the gate happened like 7 years earlier, were you already at that point?
Well, let's hope not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's the scary part, is you don't know the progression of the disease, and everybody progresses differently.
Wow, okay.
So maybe. I don't know.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but my knowledge or my experience with Parkinson's is I grew up and my knowledge was not so much Michael J. Fox first, but Muhammad Ali.
Sure.
It was like, hey, Muhammad Ali has Parkinson's, and that was what I knew about Parkinson's. And I saw him, whatever, give a speech or whatever, and I saw the way that he moved and everything. And I remember actually being really scared. I would, when I was probably, maybe 10 years old, I remember holding my hand out and trying to be as steady as possible and seeing a little shake and being like, holy shit, maybe I have Parkinson's disease. And there was a period where I actually was, I mean, as just like, you know, an ignorant child, thought that I did. And I was like, what does it mean? Do I think I have it? Can I have it at this young? Like, will I get it later?
Can I box really well maybe now?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I have an extraordinary boxing talent.
Yeah.
But that was what I knew about Parkinson's. And I really didn't know anything else other than shaking. That's all I associated with it. And I don't know. I really don't know anything else about it.
So real quick, I met a woman at a fundraiser last week. She's 25. She was diagnosed when she was 21 and she'd had symptoms since she was 12. So
you can get it really
young. You can get it when you're really young.
And that would be early onset or like super early onset.
Yeah, it's super, super early onset, I guess. I don't know.
Whoa.
Now,
they call it super duper.
With your age and the diagnosis that you've gotten, is that sort of the average sort of age that people...
This is still early onset. That's what I... 1 in 5 are under 50.
Okay, yeah.
And that's early onset.
Yeah, because when you said 40, I was like, man, that sounds so young for...
Yeah, it feels like an old person's disease. But
it does,
it's not.
But then again, like, how old was Michael J. Fox?
He was 28.
Whoa,
oh,
really?
Shit. So
yeah.
he was like early.
Yeah.
He was getting close to super duper.
Muhammad Ali must have been pretty early too now.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, no, he was probably in his 40s, maybe 50s.
Yeah. Okay. He was getting up there.
But still early onset.
But yeah, but like he also had a lot of blows to the head, so you're not sure what triggered.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is there any,
go ahead, Jared.
No.
Is there any and now is Parkinson's, to your knowledge, is this a genetic thing? Are you or were you destined to have Parkinson's?
No-ish. So I've talked to some scientists who are researchers in this field, and one of them that I talked to said it's 100% hereditary, but it can skip like 4 or 5 generations.
Right.
And it's got to come from both your mom and dad's side simultaneous.
Okay. So they both have to have the gene.
Right. But it can date back to before you're aware. But that's
crazy.
One scientist.
Because sort of like,
but they say there's like maybe 500 different mutated cells that could possibly be, the cause.
Yeah,
man, how smart are people?
And they're tracking these genes around the world, and they'll find a family in Italy that has the gene, and a family in Zimbabwe, and a family in Calgary, and that's the same gene. So we'll put that as one of the possible genes for Parkinson's.
Oh my God!
Wait!
Yeah.
What?
So they're hunting genes in individual families around the world.
Like they're looking for the ground zero gene one kind of thing?
Well,
like the particular
mutation? So they think they found 50 of them, and they think there's probably 500.
Whoa.
Dude, how?
That's smarts.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I'm with you, Tay, in that my understanding of Parkinson's is like shaky.
Wow.
Guys, I didn't know. I wasn't going for that.
No, you meant not that your understanding.
My
was
understanding of Parkinson's, is what I think of. It's like, fuck's sakes. So shakiness and that instability.
Oh, okay, I get what you mean.
Well, fuck off, Taylor. And so that's all I really knew about Parkinson's, and all of this stuff is like really kind of blowing my mind. What's the deal with like how far we've come with Parkinson's? Or do you know?
I'm so new to this. I'm just absorbing all of this as fast as I can.
Of course.
But what I can tell you though is we've come a long way, but we're kind of where cancer was in the 80s. So if you think about when people talked about cancer, they have cancer. It wasn't bladder cancer, it wasn't liver cancer, it wasn't lung cancer, you just had cancer.
Yeah.
Right now you have Parkinson's. But there's probably 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 different kinds of, everybody's Parkinson's is different.
Right.
So they're not looking for a cure for Parkinson's. They're looking for a cure for everybody's individual Parkinson's.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's kind of like cystic fibrosis, right? Like there's so many different genetic mutations of cystic fibrosis, and that's, same with cancer.
And they have like a quasi cure for a certain type of CF.
Yeah, I wouldn't say quasi cure. Dude, that pisses people off so bad.
Quasi cure just seems like not a cure.
Yeah.
It's something that
it isn't a cure.
I'm using cure because
I know.
Because if you take it at a young age, it will stop the progression of your CF.
It can more or less.
The part that will kill you.
It can really heavily affect the progression in a positive way, but it doesn't halt it. It's not like
quasi.
The
thing, if you wanted to add to that, because I was going to move on with something.
I was going to actually answer the question about shakiness, because it's come up a couple of times, and everybody knows about shaky. But there are like 20 or 30 different symptoms that come with this.
Yeah. Fill me in on that. Yeah. I want to know the meat of this disorder.
So everybody's dealt like 5 or 7 or 10 different symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that's why everybody's Parkinson's is so different.
Right.
So I've got the gait issues. I've got the shaky hand. I've lost my sense of smell.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh no, you're like Dewey Cox.
Well, actually, that's good that Taylor's in the room then right now yeah. because you're not missing out on the stench of him.
So, but I love food yeah. and wine. I was out wine tasting the other weekend and I like started sniffing. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
are we talking like a full
97%?
Okay, sure.
You're never gonna make it.
Yeah.
It's which affects your taste buds and
yeah,
everything
it's gonna
else.
Affect so all that
I'm
stuff,
over-salting
yeah.
things now, so now I have high blood pressure, so that sucks.
Sure.
Oh man. Because you're like, I just can't taste it.
Yeah. So, well, like for sushi, they give you the dab of the wasabi.
Yeah.
I used to use a little bit of that. Like, I'll use the whole thing now.
Oh, I'm with you, man. I love
it. Can I get four servings of wasabi, please?
Yeah. Like, sir, you're just eating the wasabi. You can't fill up on the wasabi only.
Yeah, just eating the sushi, but taking the wasabi and snorting it. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I got it. I got it back.
We don't need that.
And then things like typing, like because my left hand is faster than my right hand, trying to keep up with the thought process, I'm now typing mostly with my left hand across the whole keyboard.
Oh, what a trip. Right. It's like your brain's working just as quick. You're ready to hit those words. But the left hand's like,
can do return right hand, but that's, I'm just going to leave you there.
Right.
Did you write with your right hand too?
Oh yeah. So now my writing is horrible. Like it's really tiny.
Yeah. You weren't like, I'm going to force my left hand to learn.
I've taught my left hand how to shave, how to eat, throw the frisbee with my son, because I was you'd throw right-handed, but it'd fly in all the different directions because I couldn't communicate my brain to release on time to go straight.
Yeah.
So I had to relearn how to throw and catch with my left.
Wow. What else? What are some other symptoms that you've noticed?
Well, I mean, cognitive issues. So there's times where forgetfulness, or a lot of people have more extreme cognitive issues, especially short-term memory as it progresses. My voice. So I actually stopped being on the air a lot on the radio because I couldn't do a full shift anymore because my voice would fade. And so a lot of people, Parkinson's physically steals most Parkinson's patients' voice.
Mm. No way.
Which is why I'm so eager to talk about it now while I still have a voice.
Yeah.
Because I want my story to be out there and I want more people with Parkinson's to tell their stories, why they still can, because... Yeah. If we don't, it doesn't kill us. Parkinson's isn't a deadly disease, so we're not going to raise funds for research and stuff unless we start being activists.
That was something else that you just said that I didn't know, was that Parkinson's is not considered a degeneratively fatal disease?
No, it's degenerative, and it'll cause things that could kill you, but Parkinson's itself won't kill you.
It's not
going
to be the thing that kills you.
Wow.
I just want to touch on how just how like powerful and simultaneously heartbreaking and beautiful it is that you've spent so much of your career in the world of radio, the world of audio, the world of like, you know, storytelling through voice, and yet you're slowly having that ripped away from you, and to have the foresight of going, well, fuck. If that's the case, then I need to act now and do as much as I can to make a difference in terms of the world of Parkinson's awareness.
It scares the hell out of me.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there are days where I can't find the right word, or you've heard about freezing, like the gait, but I get freezing with my voice, or I'll get freezing when I'm eating, where I just can't. Like move my arm to cut meat and not knowing, like this morning I woke up, swallowing's a big issue for people with Parkinson's because that's an automatic thing that your brain does. Mm-hmm. Your brain communicates with your throat, you swallow now. I was just talking and you just swallow while you talk sometimes. It didn't happen and I started choking this morning.
Mm.
I mean, that's a real issue. They have swallowing classes and they have voice classes. And
is there a specific for
Parkinson's?
For Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
Is there a part where there's like, if you do these things, you might be able to, like, I don't know, grow that neural pathway back at all? Like,
there's theories for that. Yeah. I mean, you can remap your brain. There's a lot of science on that. So you can find different pathways, but you're never going to get those brain cells back.
Right. What was your, like you just said, it scares the hell out of me. What was your reaction?
That's
you get told this news. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking about my wife and my son. My son's 8 years old, and we've got a lot of time left for him in the house, and it's hard for him to understand what's going on. And
yeah.
I've been married for a while, and I don't want to become, I still want a wife. I don't want a caretaker.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know, and not knowing how it's going to progress, how much time you have, like, I don't know from day to day if I wake up with a new pain or something, if that's a pain for the today or if it's a pain for the rest of my life.
Right. If that's like the late 40s pain or the mm-hmm. or the Parkinson's pain.
Right. Know, yeah. And so and because nobody can tell me how this is going to progress, I don't know how much time I have left with them to travel, to, you know, to teach them how to play guitar or whatever we want to do. So I guess that's where my brain went is, you know, shit, what, yeah. How, what, you kind of want to live life quick.
How long ago were you diagnosed?
It was last August, so.
Okay, so.
Nine months ago.
Not quite a year. In that diagnosis and having some space from that initial reaction of like, oh shit, how much time do I have left? Have you seen a shift in terms of how you are viewing the day to day, you know, like sort of taking that information, taking that hourglass that's been now flipped and using it?
You know, what's interesting is, you know, my instinct was to speed things up and now I'm slowing everything down. I'm enjoying everything more. You know, because of my walk, I used to be frustrated and try to walk through it. Try to go faster, then it would make me trip more.
Yeah.
So now I live at my new pace. So I had to recalibrate the pace of which I live life, how, you know, where my attention goes. I'm off email at home most of the time now. Like, I'm just trying to live in the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Reading a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh and
yeah, right.
I don't know if you guys remember me saying this. I think it was yesterday at some time where I was talking about a lot of people that get told that they have a disease, they have to reinvent themselves in a way. And that came from a piece that I really, really loved from a guy named Davis Finney. Are you familiar with Davis Finney at all?
I'm not.
He's he was like a huge American pro cyclist in the 70s or 80s, and he has Parkinson's.
Oh, Taylor's
and,
dad.
Taylor Finney's dad, yeah. And he talks a shitload about like mindfulness and like this massive meditative state mm-hmm. that he has adopted since his diagnosis, because he came from a life of extreme athleticism and he was a sprinter in cycling, which is like one of the most insane disciplines, and going from 1,000 miles an hour to going, now this is how I move. This is, and his speech is very affected, and like, you know, he talks about how the mundane activities of life, washing the dishes, going for a walk,
yeah.
become this totally different experience, and how he gets so immersed in the moment because that's where the beauty is for him now, because he's reinvented himself. And there was just so much, I was very taken with his take on life since his diagnosis. And when you just said that, I was like, boom, just catapulted back to this video that I saw him do. So you're finding that kind of, is it like a mindfulness practice for you?
Certainly, absolutely. And you know, my wife and I are both into that, and so yeah. It's, and we're teaching our son how to be more mindful and live in the moment and mm-hmm. enjoy whatever is sent your way. And you know, for me, everything I do is probably 100% more effortful than it was before my diagnosis. Just to wash a dish and to hold on to it and not let it break. And they break, and then you laugh about it. Like, you have to use humor. Yeah. Or
you know. Because if you got mad every time you dropped the dish, then.
Well, and I am much more quick to anger and much more quick to scare. Like, I find, like, I can get scared really easily now. Like, it's almost like
spooked? Like spooked. Like someone comes around the corner and you're like, Jesus like Christ.
It just kind of freaks me out. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm,
that's interesting.
Yeah, a little bit slower than that chair, but.
Jesus Christ. Like
yeah. Thanks for slowing it down to 25% speed.
And this is what I was really curious in, because we started off talking a lot about, like, the three of us come from almost no knowledge, a place of no knowledge of Parkinson's. And like a lot of our initial questions are like, whoa, what about this? Like, what do you experience this? What is this like? But what I'm really curious in is more of that, the emotional side of that, because, you mentioned that everybody's experience is different in dealing with it. And like in your particular instance, you're like, you know, in charge of this, like this bit, you have this big job at a radio company where you're overseeing a lot of different projects, and you have this like, you know, job where you're in your mid 40s and you have a lot of responsibilities. So how do you tell your colleagues and go to your place of employment and tell them that you have something that is degenerative like this?
It's hard. I think everybody needs to do it if they have it, but it's hard because you don't know the reaction and you're scared. For me, I told my boss first, not too far after I was diagnosed, and took him out for a beer. It just said, hey, something I got to tell you. And I don't know what it means, what it's going to look like. And he was so supportive. And everybody that's above me in this company has been so supportive in everything I'm doing. And they're like, if you need time away, if you need us to buy special equipment, like voice recognition software, whatever you need, ask us. Which is the response you want, but is also, you know, from an emotional standpoint, it's like, wow, you know, I'm valued. And you don't know until it's put to the test.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And the fear is probably that it's the reverse of that. Or maybe that you get some fluff answer, but it's really like, well, like maybe Larry won't be able to do his job anymore, so maybe we should replace Larry. Yeah. Like, is that a thought that goes through your mind?
Well, sure. And as time goes on, like, I don't know how fast I'm going to degenerate.
And the other thing is, like you said, it's not likely not going to take your life anytime soon. So, I mean, you have a full life to still live, right. And you need to financially be able to support your family. And like, I can imagine that's probably...
That weighs on me a lot. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
I think a question that's kind of riding on a lot of listeners' minds is coming back to when you took your boss out for that beer. Did he feel bad for you and buy you the beer?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I mean, there's a lot of compassion.
How great is that, right?
It's awesome. Yeah, I know. I always pull out the PD card. Yeah. I'm like,
and you're
like,
I'm just going to do this one at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah,
you get, every beer.
Like, how many people work here? That's it. You could at least get like 20, 30 beers that week.
You could literally just line up like half hour increments where you meet with one person at a time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Go, I'm you just going to buy it. Let's get yeah, a beer.
And like line up for craft beer fest. So you're just
you guys
like,
have this all planned out.
You could probably do two beers every half hour too. Yeah. So yeah.
You could do 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the end of the day, that's how many beers. Okay.
And the alcohol doesn't really hurt me with my medication, so that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, oh, there
that's
you go. Wonderful. Hey, that's it. That's something I find interesting is the medication thing. Like, how do you manage Parkinson's, or what are the things that they're doing to try to?
Well, there's like one main drug that is sort of the go to.
Yeah.
Which is levodopa carbidopa. Which
that is not the name of a drug. That's a child's like levodopa carbidopa. It's that.
No,
that's
that's a spell from Harry Potter.
Yeah, right?
So
yeah.
It's actually two drugs in one pill.
Okay,
and the carbidopa is only in there so you don't like puke.
Okay, so the levodopa
is basically synthetic dopamine.
Whoa!
So, because you're not producing dopamine in your brain anymore, which is why the brain cells die.
Okay.
Oh, trippy.
And so, when you ask your hand to do something, it's the dopamine that is the connective juices that tells your hand to move. And if you don't have that, then you can't tell.
Did you say the carbidopa is anti nausea?
Yeah.
And because just like getting blasts of levodopa is nausea-inducing?
Yeah, and depending on your mix, I mean, they have to like sort of find the right mix for each individual. Like usually, you know, most people can do like 120, I forget what it is, 150 over 25 or whatever. So yeah. 150 levodopa over 25 carbidopa. But some people need the 50 the carbidopa to counteract.
Sure, right. I can't stop thinking about how levodopa carbidopa sounds like some sort of like
something from like the Teletubbies.
No, and I was thinking like a. Czechoslovakian like fairy tale character, you know, like a witch that has that lives in it, that is part like cabin, part chicken. What is that? Baba Yaba, levodopa carbidopa, Baba Yaba, come and get you.
You mean the Baba Duke?
Yeah,
the
Baba Duke. Something like that.
With the dopamine thing,
yeah.
Are you Now, is that like what's is that affecting your mood, your sleep? Like, what's the lack of dopamine production doing to you?
So,
like, if you take away the Parkinson's, like those side effects, I mean, there's got to be just direct effects to not producing dopamine.
Sure. Well, it affects the way you can move because it controls your movement.
It controls the movement, okay.
And then it does impact sleep. It can impact any automatic function you have. So bladder control, sex, you know, all those things are impacted by not having the dopamine.
Did your libido like just kind of drop? And is that something that happened that actually my fucking libido dropped like 10 years ago, like maybe an early onset kind of thing? Or
it's probably been fading.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
interesting. It's
there's also another drug that I was on, because like if you take levodopa carbidopa too long, the side effects is dyskinesia, which is what you see Michael J. Fox, where he's got the rolling shoulders. That's not Parkinson's. That's the drug.
Oh my God.
That's called dyskinesia.
Oh, right. So when he's, because I remember watching Spin City. I was a big Spin City fan. I don't know if you guys watched that.
Never watched it.
Michael J. Fox, City Hall sitcom. And always being like, in the later years of the show, going, you can kind of see how he deals with his Parkinson's on set more, like just in the way that his character develops and the way that his character moves to compensate for it, which is
fascinating as an actor.
Yeah, like, because he's literally working with his disease as an actor, which fascinating. And he had a lot of that with the shoulder. I mean, that's a trademark Michael J. Fox.
Right, but that's called dyskinesia. So they gave me a drug called amantadine, which they said over time will build up and hopefully hold off the dyskinesia. Well, in the meantime, it gave me hallucinations.
Whoa. So, what kind of hallucinations?
So, like, I'd be in my office here at the radio station. I'd see spiders crawling on the wall, or I'd see dogs walking up down the hall. And
wait, like, whoa. So, like, full on
hallucinations.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And
they took me off that, which is good.
That is really good. Like, you see the spider crawling up the wall. Are you thinking,
I had to look at it like three times.
Right.
Like, go,
wait a minute.
Am I really seeing that?
Yeah. Wow, man, what a trip.
Yeah. Your producer, Nikki, would come in and be like, Larry, there's a fucking spider on the wall. Why aren't you doing anything?
There's spiders all over this place. What's going on?
It's bring your dog to work day. Duh. Oh, God, I thought I was hallucinating.
Do they give you any? Are you on the levodopa carbidopa now?
Yeah, so I take that five times a day.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
Okay. And I do a double dose at night with a time release. So it helped me sleep.
So are they giving you anything else aside? Like, you know, did they replace that hallucinogenic drug?
There's not really much else they can.
Okay. So the, what did you call it again? The
dyskinesia.
Dyskinesia. Is that something that is kind of inevitable at this point now because of the levodopa?
Not everybody gets dyskinesia, but usually it happens to people with young onset.
Right, okay.
Because they're on the drug longer than most.
And so that's that kind of like more twitchy movement.
The shoulder rolls.
So how good did it feel to, when they told you that you had young onset, how good did it feel that they told you you were young?
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was sweet,
Yeah, it's like, that's all so sweet. Thank you.
I'm interested in that moment when you find out. I know that we touched on it, but was your wife there with you when you found out?
She went to the appointment with the neurologist for Parkinson's, but not for the MS.
Okay.
Which I forget, she may have been out of town or whatever. But like, I wasn't putting that much gravitas on the moment. So I it's hard. When they say you might have MS, you're like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
It's like, well, we'll go here and we'll figure this out.
Yeah.
And then they said, I said, oh, I don't have MS. And they're like, well, you might have Parkinson's. I'm like, shit, I didn't even thought of that. Like, and what does that mean? Because I didn't know. I was like, I thought, like, how much time do I have left? And then I called her from the parking lot after that appointment. I was like, I might have Parkinson's. And when I said it out loud, like, I started crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
because I'm guessing you didn't know. You at that point, you didn't really know much about Parkinson's.
I knew Muhammad Ali and Michael J. Fox.
That's right. And there's this, for whatever reason.
Neil Diamond now.
There's this, oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Didn't know. There's this weight to that word, right? There is this, like, there is this, and what is that? Is that because we don't know, like...
I think it's because we don't know, but we know these two super prominent figures that have it.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's fun, it's interesting that it's, like, that it's, like you said, it's where cancer was in the 80s, because I feel like in the public eye, like... You'd be hard pressed to ask a person if they don't know what Parkinson's is, and when I say that, I mean in the most basic sense.
Yeah,
of the word.
Aware of
they're aware of
Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali.
Exactly, but like me, they are most likely going, "Oh, that's the disease where you start to shake."
Right. That's right,
and that's what everybody knows.
Yeah,
and like also, beyond that,
and you don't have to shake to have Parkinson's.
Right. Exactly.
So there's people that don't shake, they don't tremor, they don't. But they're losing the brain function, and they have five different symptoms that you can't see, mm-hmm. and they're suffering in silence.
I think that sadness and fear of it, though, is the fact that, like, we know that Muhammad Ali and Michael J. Fox are two people who have it, but also are unable to, like, do the things that they love and are great at and known for because of the disease, too. Like, you know, like, I know that Muhammad Ali wasn't fighting, but, like, he could no longer... do that because it inhibited his ability to move that way, you know, and same with Michael J. Fox. So we know that it takes away people's passions from them. So I think that is enough. And like from Larry's story and the experience that we're learning about right now, like we are learning that it's taking away your love and your passion for life and what you do. So I think it is shitty and pretty fucking emotionally difficult to deal with being diagnosed with that, even if you don't know, like, all of the ins and outs of it.
But that is what I'm saying, is that by not knowing adds this sense of gloom and doom to it, because it's so unknown. There's so much unknown to for the most people, I feel like.
You're much more scared of what you don't understand.
Yeah, exactly. and also this is something that I was kind of curious to dive into with you, is that... I'm assuming that when you found out, what your knowledge of Parkinson's was this like degenerative and very visible illness, you know, of the shaking of the body. I didn't realize that some people don't show the visible symptoms of Parkinson's, but knowing that you do, and you are beginning to, and that's becoming more and more prevalent. What does that feel like, knowing that you're going to go from this human who was once living with no disease to once living with an invisible illness that is slowly progressing into a very visible illness?
It's frightening because, you know, I've met a lot of people with Parkinson's since I've been diagnosed. And I was with a guy last weekend who was diagnosed 19 years ago. And he was 49 years old when he was diagnosed. So it's a very similar story. He had a 12-year-old daughter. So we were comparing notes, and I was trying to figure out, like, what was his path like? Because you kind of want to know something, like, even though my path won't be the same. And he was able to work for, like, 10 more years, and then it just got too much. And so he had to back away from his job. And so that gets me thinking. And then, like, for people to physically see me moving uncontrollably is scary. I mean, that's how I started to tell my staff, because I started to show symptoms and they started to notice.
Yeah.
Whether it was my walk or whether there was a moment where if I get super emotional, I tremor more.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or shake more. And so I was shaking really quite aggressively. And so I pulled some of the staff that was there into the room. I said, "Hey, you should probably know." But then I didn't tell all my staff until I told. So I went on TV and shared my story on World Parkinson's Day.
Oh, wow. Now, how was that liberating?
Yeah, scary. Yeah. But the response back has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because so supportive. And the Parkinson's community has been great. But just like people like, hey, my aunt has it, my mom has it, my brother has it, and, you know, everybody can relate to it, and to see somebody talking about it, because you don't see people talking about it a lot. You see Michael J. Fox out there, and there's not a lot of other people that are talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been great, and I've I've even connected with people with other diseases. So I was on the radio talking about how my dad died of a degenerative disease called myelofibrosis, which basically solidifies your bone marrow from the inside out.
Whoa.
And shuts down all your organs.
Whoa.
Fuck.
It's a horrible disease. You should do an episode.
Myelofibrosis.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So I'm on the air with Charles Adler across the country talking about this. And a guy in Calgary hears it. He listens to it like three times. And he emails me. He goes, I've had myelofibrosis for 5 years and I've never heard anybody say it out loud except for my doctor. And so,
wow.
So we connected and he asked us all sorts of questions about what he can expect for end of life.
Yeah.
Because you only
yeah.
get like 5 years.
Right. Whoa, really? Okay.
Yeah. And so my mom was in town. So I asked her all the questions that he had on a tape recorder and we sent, or on my iPhone, and I sent him the file so he could hear us talking about it.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into that, right? Like knowing that you have something that progresses so quickly that it's going to take your life. There's a lot of planning, right?
Yeah.
And like end of life planning and stuff like that. Which makes me wonder about your situation. Like how much advanced care planning are you doing now? Or is that something that you think about?
We're in the think about it stage.
Yeah.
We probably should get our act together. there's denial.
You only can really think about it too. I mean, there's some things I guess you could do, but like what are
somebody
some
gave me
that,
great, somebody gave me great advice.
Yeah.
They said, you have to determine if you want a wife or a caregiver.
Yeah.
And you make that decision early on. And if it's not going to, if your wife's not going to be your caregiver, then you got to, you both need to know that. So when the time comes, you make the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the consensus there between the two of you?
Well, like, yeah, she's going to be my wife. And then we'll find a caregiver.
To bring in.
Why is that? Why do they make you, or why do they recommend that you make that distinction?
Because the caregiving will take over the relationship.
It takes a toll on a relationship between two people when, you know, it's like who wants their wife to suddenly become their mother
or their nurse
or their nurse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough. It's a lot of work.
Was that an easy decision for you?
For me, yeah.
And how did
but
your
I never
feel?
Thought about it. Like right. I didn't know to think about it.
No, yeah. Well, where did you get that advice? Who told you that?
I wish I remembered.
Well, I
get a lot of advice these days.
Do you remember if it was like a pal or something, or was it like a medical professional that was like, hey, listen, think about
it,
this?
I think it was somebody who has Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Or, right. No, you know, I remember now. It's a guy whose wife had Parkinson's who died.
Mm.
And he when she was diagnosed with Parkinson's, he became her caregiver. And after a year, she fired him. She goes, you can no longer be my caregiver because I need my husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I think that there's a lot to be said for that. But also, in the exact same breath, for some people, that might actually really work.
Sure.
You know, like, I don't know. I don't know for sure, but I would hazard a guess that if my dad became really sick, my mom would without a doubt drop everything and very happily take over as caretaker.
Your mom's also a nurse.
She's a nurse.
She's also the person who took gauze off of your penis too.
Yes,
so like she has an ability to.
I feel like I'm walking into a different episode.
At the age of 17.
It was a very different episode. Yeah, I was circumcised at 16 or 17, and my mom took care of me. But she's a caretaker. Like that's her role, and that always has been her role. And I feel like she would take a lot of pride in taking on that role for her husband if he ended up getting sick. But then again, for other people, it's the stress, the thought of the weight of the stress of that is far too overwhelming.
Yeah,
far too scary.
The stress of probably trying to do both.
Yeah,
I think because I feel like you could choose do one or the other, but when you're going into it trying to do both. That's where that overwhelming sensation or overwhelming feeling comes up, because you're trying to be the loving, and you're trying to have the relationship that you've had.
Yeah.
At the same time, be the person that's giving the care that you need as a, it's a dynamic that I can't even really wrap my head around.
What has, what has educating your son been like?
Pretty cool. So it's, he's eight, so it's like, it's not too advanced, but we don't shy about, we're not shy about talking about it in front of him. I give him jobs. So like when we're out and about, he's got to tell me if my arm starts shaking. So he feels like he's included in the disease.
Yeah.
And then he takes the piss out of me quite a bit. So he'll walk into a room dragging his foot. or in the morning, like when I stretch, it's like my arm shakes really bad. So he'll walk into the room and do the same thing and just mock me. So
that's cute.
Yeah. So we talk to him about, like, he can't jump on me like he used to. Like if I'm having a bad day or if I'm just in a lot of pain or whatever, then he'll not understand necessarily that we can't wrestle like we used to.
Or yeah.
I can't stay on the floor and play cars for 2 hours anymore. My body's not as limber as it used to be, even though I exercise more now and stretch more.
Sure. Yeah. Those days that we all have good days and bad days. And in my case with cystic fibrosis, like there's some days that are, I go throughout the day and it's like, I don't even really think about my illness. And then there's some days where I'm like, Jesus Christ, I am just fully embodying how shitty it is to live with CF today. How often do you have like bad, hard days with your illness?
Probably a couple times a month right now. The really bad days. What's interesting is forgetting that you have a disease or feeling like you're free of the disease. That happened to me early on where I just forgot. So I don't drive that much anymore because I'm right-handed and my reaction times are so slow that I'm scared to. That a lot of people still drive with Parkinson's and that's great. Mm-hmm. But for me, I've just made the choice to cut way back. Mm-hmm. But so I was going to the bus stop. And there's the bus, and I'm about a block away, and I see the bus pulling up. And like I do, like anybody would do, I start running. Well, my brain can't tell my right side to keep up with my left, and I just face planted and rolled over.
No.
I was so pissed. I was so pissed.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm all bloodied, knuckled, and my shirt's ripped. I'm like, I'm getting on this bus.
Yeah.
They're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And I'm bandaging my knuckles on the bus.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then that's what triggered me to just slow everything down.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what a perfect wake up call, right? Yeah. Just like face first.
If there's the bus, I'll wait for the next one.
That's right. Yeah.
And when you're talking about the brain, like your brain cells, you're losing brain cells. And that has having this physical effect. I mean, it's a mental thing that's then having the physical effect. But is there a degeneration of your like intellect as well? Like, I can't communicate in the same way? Is there a degeneration that way?
I'm probably not the best person to answer that because I think I'm just as smart as I've always been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if there's not now, like, have the doctor said that it's more a symptom?
Memory, like short-term memory or verbal loss of the ability to get the words out or just loss of vocal, projection because it gets to become a soft, raspy voice.
So they're not like saying, you're basically your intellect is going to start going backwards.
Nobody's told me that directly, but you can only assume that at some point something's going to.
I'm just going from the words brain degenerative, and brain and going, oh, okay, well, I'm trying to connect the dots. And I don't know. I mean,
let's
talk in 20 years and find out.
Yeah. And the brain, too, is just such a complex thing, right? So I'm sure that there's. That there's parts of your brain that aren't going to be affected by the degeneration of your illness, and they'll just remain the same. But then there's these other parts like the motor skills and the articulation of words. The brain is just like such an insane complex highway, and you touch one part of it and affect one part of it, and it can affect 10 different things, but everything else on the other side is just like totally
radio lab.
You know what really sucks is I'm not able to use the right pocket of my pants anymore because I can't fit my hand in the pocket.
What makes it use so that you can't push it in hard enough?
I can't do that. And so like But if I'm standing up, I can. But like if I'm sitting down, like there's no way.
Yeah, there's something in there. It's in there for good.
And which is like I was in a taxi once and my wallet was in my right pocket. No. And I had to lay down in the back seat. The guy's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm going to have to get out." And he goes, "No, you got to pay me." I'm like, no, you don't understand.
You're like, dude, I'm clearly not going anywhere fast.
I have Parkinson's.
Did you have to get him to reach into your pants?
No, I figured it out. Oh. I actually pushed it up from the outside.
No way.
You're like, "Hey, buddy, you want to help me out here?" Just
one hand. Yeah.
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
As a percentage, how often... do people say, when you say I have Parkinson's, how often do people say, "Oh, Michael J. Fox"?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Like 90% of the time?
Yeah.
And have you seen the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where him and Larry have the big dispute and he lives... he lives above Larry David and he's stomping around upstairs and Larry comes up and Larry thinks that he's doing it to piss him off, but he's like, "I gotta wear these boots because of my Parkinson's," and like and it's all this whole like the whole episode is Michael is and you're wondering as the watcher going,
does Michael J. Fox have Parkinson's?
Is he using his Parkinson's to mask the way that he's fucking with Larry David?
Well, doesn't everybody with a disease use it to their advantage?
Man, I'm telling you, I play the CF card all the time.
My wife goes, "You know, not everything's related to Parkinson's."
Yeah.
Well,
in my world, it is.
The other thing that pisses me off is that they're like, the one thing that can sort of control the advancement of the symptoms is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, fuck, it couldn't have been chocolate.
Yeah. Like, really? Give me something to work with here.
Come on now, exercise. Yeah. So I'm trying to find my exercise because, like, I tried biking and I'm, you know, with the problem with biking is, like, this leg doesn't work, so I got to do all the work with my left side.
Mm. And then you're just going to run into a bunch of injuries.
Yeah. And then now boxing. So they do have boxing for Parkinson's where it just, you know, I tried that out. I really like that.
Also probably a great outlet to just like fucking punch out some of that anger, you know, like but get out some of that rage.
It's all
rage.
Big movement stuff. So Tai Chi and swimming it's all about getting the big movements. Mm-hmm. So in the morning and they have lots of free videos online and stuff and you just do like stretches and stuff just to get the body warm. Mm. But I've never done a regular exercise. So that's been like a total lifestyle change. And I'm not even where I need to be. They're like, "You need to do like a half hour to an hour a day." And I'm like, "I got a good 10, 15 minutes in me."
Yeah. What is the tie to exercise again?
Well, so what happens is your movements become very small.
Mm-hmm.
So your handwriting becomes really small and like you begin to shuffle your feet. And so it just keeps everything open.
Okay.
It's called NeuroFit. So it hopefully is part of remapping your brain and stuff too. But it's just like forcing you to just stretch everything out.
It's like you're just channeling those new neural pathways to connect in a different way so that you don't, I guess, completely lose the ability.
And mindfulness can play a big role in that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to think really hard. I mean, take for example a muscle that you never use, like individually. So for example, if I said I wanted to flex my chest muscle, now it, for the average person who never tries to do that, it's going to be impossible for them to only flex that one muscle. They can do it if they flex all the muscles in their arm and use this big group of muscles, and then their chest will flex.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was 12 or 13 years old, and a friend of mine was like, "Hey, check this out," in the dressing room after hockey practice, and he's like bounces his pecs up and down, and I'm like, "Holy shit, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen." So I'm like, I want to do that.
Still was
get out much.
Still is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I'm like, I want to do that.
You shit yourself.
I shit myself, and there was no movement in my chest. Lots of movement in my butthole. And so I thought about that for like 3 weeks. I would just sit and think about that, about moving that muscle. And eventually, the neural pathway creates itself, and that starts to move exactly like this. Jeremy's moving his eyebrows up and down. You had to think about that at some point in your life.
I train myself to do
that. You train yourself to do that. Because you don't have the neural pathway to do it until you think about it. So it's almost like there's a meditative mindfulness quality that envelopes making a muscle move and making it move.
Do you know that you can make I think it's like something like a 50% technical improvement. Basically, so if you went and practiced a physical movement pattern, and that was deemed to be 100% effective in improving the technical aspect of that movement, you can increase that 50% just by thinking about it alone.
Why are you guys doing math on the podcast? This is ridiculous.
Because we know that Jeremy doesn't get it, so basically Brian and I can speak our own language, and Jeremy doesn't know what's happening.
I just blacked out. Trick. I don't even know where the fuck I am right now.
Basically, if you spend 2 hours thinking about something versus 1 hour physically practicing it, you're doing the same amount of improvement work.
But if you subtract 1/4 hour from that,
shut the fuck up. I've got a couple of questions that we like to throw at our guests. It's a two-parter. So the first one is, out of everything you've gone through so far, what would you say is the biggest thing that Parkinson's has taken away from you?
My certainty. My ability to walk through life feeling like I'm in control of myself.
And what would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
Perspective, and a clarity of the now, like just being here and not getting so caught up in the bullshit of every day. And, you know, when my son says, you want to go play, you know, whenever I can, I say, yeah, let's go. Where before it was like, oh, well, let me relax here.
Yeah.
How do you find your emotional happiness? Like if you, before learning that you had Parkinson's and now living with Parkinson's, like where would you put your happiness levels during both of those times?
I was really happy, I guess. I mean, we live a happy life. I've had good jobs. I have a great son, good marriage. What's interesting about Parkinson's is it sort of fades your emotions away, like your physical, like facial features and stuff. So like your people can't read you as well. So you become a better poker player.
Right. But join the world tour.
If you don't drop
But I find I need to force happiness more or be more mindful of being happy or you put on, you fake it till you make it some days.
There's more effort.
A lot more effort, yeah.
Not very many people, a small sliver of the population ever gain that perspective of being here now and not getting caught up in the bullshit of the everyday. Unfortunately, it does take, I mean, we know this in our experience because we've done almost in the hundreds of interviews. And unfortunately it does take sometimes a shit scenario, like a disease, to gain that perspective. But man, it's a good one to have because it's a
gift. Yeah. I mean, it really is.
That's why I was curious. That's why I asked about happiness because, and I know it's not the same thing, but like your ability, you say that it changed your perspective and it allows you now to kind of be more present and focus more on mindfulness. And like I kind of dealt with my own experience of dealing with anxiety and a bit of depression over the last couple of years. And one of the things that the doctor said was the two things you need most are exercise and mindfulness. And recently I've been doing a lot more of both of those. And I've noticed that my happiness is like through the roof. And I do think that being mindful and like I've been practicing yoga more, I've been trying to enjoy the moment and what I've been doing more, and I think that has definitely affected my overall happiness. But I was kind of wondering if, you know,
living with an illness can actually still provide you that perspective and allow you to be more happy, because it's kind of a shitty hand at the same time.
Well, and I think part of it is, like, I've so recently diagnosed that I'm still trying to process it.
Fresh.
Yeah.
So it's still kind of raw for me. And so
Absolutely. It hurts.
So I get pissed a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not as happy as I was when I didn't know that I had it.
Right. Like, that's fair.
Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I wonder if that will change. You know, it's so interesting, like, to think about, and I never have until right now, but to think about how with something that is degenerative, do you ever really get a chance to get used to it? You know, I guess it depends on how fast it degenerates.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've talked to others that have had it for a while, and they say it'll plateau for a bit, and then you wake up one day with a new pain, and it never goes away, or a new something, and it just never goes away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that I'm sort of dealing with right now in my own personal life, where it's like I've spent so much of my life feeling like I've been plateaued in terms of where I am with my health. But over the last, you know, 5-6 years, there's been this very gradual but very noticeable decline in like lung function. It's I don't know, the, you know.
So does that have you thinking about what your future holds?
Oh, every single day. Yeah, every single day.
So how do you stay positive?
Well, I'll tell you right now, this podcast plays a huge role in it. Surrounding myself with people who are also positive and can have a sense of humor and can like inject a little bit of that sense of humor within me when I start to lose it. Not pushing away the discomfort when it comes on, especially mentally, you know, like embracing the days where mentally it's really hard. Those are some of the things, you know.
It's interesting you talk about being around people that, you know, help you laugh at it.
Yeah.
My family, I grew up in a family where we laughed at horror and at, you know, grandma would die. Or when my wife came over, she was my girlfriend for first time for Christmas. We were going to put my dog down that week. And so we were having him play dead just to get used to it.
Oh, I mean, like that. Yeah.
So when I told
that's really funny. Yeah.
So
Jerry, we should do that with you more.
Yeah.
Zing. So when I told my family about this, I started making like, hey, I make a mean martini now, you know, stuff like that. And they can't laugh at it because they're too far away from me. So they're not living it with me. They're just from afar. They think of Michael J. Fox. They think of Muhammad Ali. And that's what they imagine my life to be, and it's hard for. And I'll text jokes or something, and it's just silence. It's weird because like I think the closer you are to people proximity wise, where they can see you every day and they can experience it with you, then it's easier to joke about it. But the farther away you are physically, it's like. It's almost like, oh, I don't know if we're allowed to laugh at that.
Because
they're probably thinking about you in the worst case scenario all the time.
Right.
Well, so, which is, I think, a perfect segue into talking about this project that you've decided to take on, When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
Yeah, it's a podcast. We're going to come out with season one in September, When Life Gives You Parkinson's. We're going to come out with about 10 episodes. When I announced that I had Parkinson's on World Parkinson's Awareness Day, we put together, Nikki Reitmeier and I, she's my producer, we put together a 20-minute mini audio documentary, just sort of day in the life stuff, me with my wife and kids and talking about stuff. And it's just an audio documentary, kind of like a single podcast episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction was so strong that we decided there's more stories to tell here. So this summer we're collecting a lot of material, and you know, I'm talking to neurologists and doctors and my family. I'm having really intimate conversations with my brothers and sister and my mom, and talking about how they're digesting what's going on. And how it affects somebody in a workforce. And so this is just season one. Well, hopefully it'll go on and on. And as my voice weakens. But I also want to introduce other people that I've met along the way that have Parkinson's and share their story as well.
And keep us posted on that.
So we can please
make sure
do.
That we put it out there when it comes out.
Yeah. For sure.
And what a you know, coming back to you saying that it's hard for some people with the sense of humor sort of thing, and it's just having that distance and not being connected and not feeling like they're a part of that process with you. You know, this is a perfect opportunity for something like that, you know, to bring people along with you on that journey, which I think is not only going to be so incredibly beneficial, I think, for yourself in dealing with your own coming to terms with this new life, but for the all the other people in your life as well. So
yeah, I hope so. I hopefully it encourages other people to tell their stories, because I think the more we talk about these diseases and make them accessible, the more we can find, you know, cures. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Larry, thank you so much for
thanks, guys. For this was awesome.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. Mm. And thank you all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another great episode, I'm sure. But until then, head on over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess is what we're supposed to be saying now, and leave a rating, a review, and definitely for sure hit the subscribe button. It's one of those things that allows us to stay up on the iTunes charts and plays a huge role in helping us spread these conversations around and get these messages out there. So it would mean a lot to us if you did that. And if you want to support us in other ways, you can do that.
You can go over to patreon.com/sickboy and contribute to our Patreon page. If you have been doing that or have done that in the past, thank you so much. It's how we get it plays a huge role in how we are here with Larry, how we've been having these awesome conversations in Vancouver. And so if you've been supporting us, thank you so much. If you do decide to support us, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it.
And as always, a big thank you to Donovan, the CPAP Morgan, for the amazing sound design on this podcast. This wouldn't be possible without him. And he just made the last 30 seconds of this podcast sound like a warm spring day, which is great. So thanks, it's Donovan, so good for doing that. And and also thanks to this person, N. Frico, who wrote in an amazing... What's it
review,
called?
A review.
Podcast.
Tell us about it,
Brian. N. Frico.
You don't say.
The subject for the review was hilarious. Mm. And the 5-star rating just said uncensored. So thanks so much for that amazing review.
Yeah, that was the right one to pick, Brian. Thanks. Really appreciate that.
And
what was their name again?
N. Friaco.
N. Friaco, you nailed it. Thank you.
Uncensored. Yeah. You heard it here first. Thank you, Take Part, for the theme music. Take Part in this.bandcamp.com if you want to hear more of their songs. And that's all I got.
Well, that is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Larry.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.